Julia Weiberg, a social legal scholar in the School of Social Science, Education and Social Work at Queen's University Belfast. I welcome Gina Cabagas-Macia to our episode today. Gina is the co-founder and director of the Political and Criminal Justice Lab in Bogota. There, she coordinates the support project for the special peace jurisdiction and leads the systematization and analysis of information in different projects. Welcome, Gina, today to our podcast. So could you perhaps start with telling us a little bit more about yourself and your interest in records and archives and what role these play in your work with the lab?
So hi, Julia. How are you? Right now, I work in a civil society organization, and I've been doing that for the last 4 years. But I'm actually a lawyer, and I'm also a historian. So I've mixed the two disciplines since I graduated from both of those undergrads. And I've actually been mostly a criminal investigator and a social investigator of human rights violations in Colombia, but also in other countries in the Latin American region. So I love archives. I love records. And I guess I'm sort of into solving crimes and figuring out how we can come to truth with the past and how to deal with it and become a more reconciled society.
Well, what role does play in that process that you were just describing?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so for the audience, maybe a bit of context on Colombia's transitional justice mechanisms. So we've had transitional justice mechanisms at least since 2006, when in Colombia there was a sort of a surrender to justice of the united front of paramilitary groups. So back in 2006 was when we started talking about transitional justice mechanisms. This was after a very long and sometimes some say still going on armed conflict, and a 50-year-old armed conflict. And with that, in that history of transitional justice mechanisms, records have played a very important role, and specifically archives. And I would say that both from the perspective of the transitional justice mechanisms, but also from the permanent judicial mechanisms, there's been a specific commitment to recover records, to recover archives, and also to have within those transitional justice mechanisms, more testimonies, both from perpetrators, but also from victims, and to collect these testimonies and try to preserve those testimonies for ongoing justice processes, but also for future justice processes. So tomorrow, 40 years ago, so November 6, 1985, there was a seize of the Palace of Justice in Colombia. The seize of the Palace of Justice was done by a former guerrilla group, which is actually the guerrilla group where our current president was part of. And then the Palace of Justice was retaken by the military. There were at least 100 people dead, many disappeared. And part of what happened or what was said that the seize of the Palace of Justice was done was actually to destroy judicial records that were part of the Palace of Justice, right? So I think that the fact that many records have been tried to be destroyed is part of why recovering them and trying to make the transitional justice mechanisms not only deal with the past, but also recover and protect those archives and records is part of the, like, of why we're doing this, right?
So you mentioned already that Colombia has been engaging in peace talks and transitional justice mechanisms for quite a while. And you have the state who did have their records probably around forced disappearance, especially as a state practice, which is very common in the Southern Cone, but also gendered crimes, for example. So in terms of the records that you have in these different transitional justice mechanisms, right? So what kind of crime do they document, and who is collecting this?
So we are collecting many types of archives and many types of records, right? So as I mentioned, there's a specific interest in judicial records. And judicial records of both active cases and cases that are not active yet. Part of the things that transitional justice mechanisms are doing, and here I'm talking about a special jurisdiction for peace. I'm talking about a truth commission that actually ended in 2022, but that was in place for 3 years, but also of a lot of mechanisms that were put in place before that. So all these mechanisms, and we talked a bit more about that afterwards, but part of the mandate and activities they've done is to actually collect and preserve those records, both the active cases and the inactive cases. So these are all judicial records. What can we find in those judicial records? We can find how evidence was collected when the episodes of violence happened, but also how criminal investigators, how prosecutors have documented those cases. So, and one of the things, so these are very big files, right? So we're talking about rooms filled with papers, but also filled with artifacts. So 10 years ago, I was actually part of a commission that was in charge of collecting those inactive cases of homicides occurred to members of a political party that was persecuted in the armed conflict, a left political party that was persecuted in the armed conflict, Unión Patriótica. And we were going around Colombia collecting these files, right? And in one of the places where we went to collect the files, one of the things we found was a room full of papers and skulls roaming around the room with fragments of bullets from evidence also there. So these records are not only paper, but also artifacts and actual evidence that was collected at the time. And the part of the role is how to preserve and protect this evidence for establishing the truth, establishing what happened, but also for establishing why it happened and establish the most responsible, both from the guerrilla groups, the paramilitary groups, and the state actors. So those are one type of records, the judicial records. Other types of records, I mentioned we've been recovering testimonies, and all of the transitional justice mechanisms that have been implemented at least since 2006 have had a special mandate to recover testimonies from people that were involved in the violence, that were involved in the war. And particularly, there's been special measures for members of the paramilitary groups, for members of the guerrilla groups, and for members of the state to come forward and give their testimony of what happened. So that's, I think, the other main crucial type of record, which is these testimonies from what happened. And this memory of what happened from all of these persons involved in the conflict have a lot of challenges. There are memories that have been tricked by time. There are memories that want to silence what happened. So it's not an objective record, but it's part of what we've been collecting. And finally, I would mention the records that the Truth Commission collected. So the Truth Commission, since it was a Truth Commission that sort of came after a bunch of other mechanisms, tried to collect what had happened in Colombia, this was a Truth Commission that had the benefit of trying to do something different, right? So the Truth Commission said, okay, we're not only going to produce books, but we're also going to produce collective records of what happened. So one of the things that the Truth Commission tried to do, and I would say that's the other type of record I wanted to mention, is to collect, like have a digitalization repository of what happened. So producing testimonies, not only from those that were responsible, but also from victims and from communities that suffered the conflict. So they've collected thousands of interviews and thousands of hours of actual hearings with victims, with communities involved and that suffered the conflict. And that's also sort of like an ongoing archive, right, of what happened. And maybe the audience can look at it. That's actually deposited on the web right now. And it's called the Transmedia of the Truth Commission. And it has, as I said, thousands of testimonies, thousands of public records of what happened. And that was sort of part of the legacy of the Truth Commission.
So, Gina, it seems to me that there's a complex layer of different types of records and different forms of records as well. And I find it especially interesting that you mentioned artifacts and that this is seen as a record as in itself.
Mm-hmm.
So when you look, you mentioned the skulls, for example, earlier, right? And the room with all the documents in it. So when you compare this to, let's say, the testimony of perpetrators,
mm-hmm.
what can each of these different types of records contribute to the different transitional justice mechanisms?
Mm-hmm.
And would they speak to each other across mechanisms? So Truth Commission and the special jurisdiction piece.
Mm-hmm. So that's an important question and a tricky question as well, because part of the things that the Colombian transitional justice mechanisms have done is that there's a bunch of them. We've had a lot since 2006 till now. Some of them are judicial mechanisms and others are extrajudicial mechanisms. And what this means is that usually there's a mandate for the extrajudicial mechanisms to collect evidence or to collect information, but not to provide that information to the judicial mechanisms. So there's actually a legal prohibition for that information that was collected through the extrajudicial mechanisms to go into the judicial mechanisms. That's sort of part of a way to actually make those responsible or people that have information on the violent facts and the crimes to come forward, give the information, and build truth. For example, for the search of the missing, for the search of the disappeared, this has been very important because the fact that there's no like legal penalty to come forward with information has also given very valuable information for the search mechanisms to establish the whereabouts of those that were disappeared during the armed conflict. But usually those records cannot go into the judicial records to establish who was responsible for these crimes. So the judicial mechanisms also had to collect this information and to actually have judicial mechanisms where those responsible, but also witnesses and victims come forward and give information that is valuable to establish those that were responsible for the crimes. So when I first came back from my master's degree in law, I worked at the Center for Historical Memory. Maybe that's a good translation of it. And one of the things that we did was to collect records around massacres that occurred in various parts of Colombia during the decade of the 2000s and the decade of the 90s and some of the 80s. And rereading these records was very important. Why was it very important? Because in the rereading of the records of the judicial files that were built to investigate these crimes at the time, when you reread them with the focus and the lens of an investigator from 2014, 2015, you see, for example, that in those massacres, not only did killings occur, but also that gender-based violence occurred. So one of the important things that was key when re-reviewing these records was to ask different questions to the records. So yeah, they were evidence of killings, but they were also evidence of, for example, women and men who appeared naked when their bodies were found. And this particularity that they were naked wasn't part of the investigation back then. But now, with the new lens, so in the massacres, not only did killings occur, but also gender-based violence occurred. And so, for example, in the Historical Memory Center, those reports that were published around these massacres have an account of the killings, but also of the other crimes that occurred. Some of them gender-based crimes. And this is one of the use of those records to publish. So the audience can also look that up. The Historical Memory Center has published reports on massacres and other types of crimes since 2009, 2008. And these are published and public records of what happened. Also, there are, of course, cases that have been tried, and some of the of those responsible have come to justice. I would say that there's less impunity than before the transitional justice mechanisms were put in place, but there's a lot to do in that front. And the other use that I've witnessed of why records matter and why records are being used in those transitional justice mechanisms is to search for those that were disappeared. Records have been determinant for establishing the whereabouts to establish where these disappeared could be, but also to establish what was done to them. Whether actually some of those disappeared have appeared alive. Yes.
Could you give us an example of that, especially like, you know, what type of records did you use and what was the outcome of the use of these specific types of records?
Yeah. So in Colombia, with the 2016 agreement that was signed between the Colombian government and the largest guerrilla group in Colombia, the FARC, EPE, one of the accords that they reached was to build a extrajudicial and humanitarian mechanism to search for those that were disappeared. That's the unit for the search. And the unit for the search has been in place since 2018. And so they use judicial records, they use testimonies, a lot of testimonies that cannot be brought to the justice mechanism. They can only be used in the humanitarian mechanism. So though the example I was giving was about persons that were disappeared to their families during the armed conflict. And when combining the records of those that demobilized or that surrendered their arms in the peace agreement, and those that were reported missing, some matches have occurred. And so persons that were abducted, some of them as minors, as children, they were abducted as children by the FARC and entered to be part of the FARC ranks, actually signed the peace agreement in 2016. And because of the matching of those records, so these are databases, these are matching the records of how the families remember how these persons were before they disappeared and the day they disappeared, and match this account with what the FARC members have said from those territories where these persons disappeared. Some of them made the link and some of them were found alive. Others have been found dead in vast mass graves. But yeah, this is part of what records are able to do, to actually match information from those disappeared and what has happened in the conflict and make that match.
So, Gina, you had mentioned earlier that the Truth Commission is digitalizing basically all of the testimonies and records they have been collecting over the last years. Does digitalization play another role in the transitional justice process in Colombia? For example, you use open source information, or you use AI tools to match locations. You were just talking about the databases and how you match the testimonies from perpetrators with the testimonies of families of the disappeared. So do you use any digital tools in doing this, or in verifying, for example, records that are being used or were used in the special jurisdiction for peace?
So Julia, as I mentioned, I'm a historian, and actually my master's thesis of history was on the 18th and 19th century. So I'm a paper girl, right? I'm a paper girl. I love papers. I love touching them, looking at them, reading them. But since I started working at the prosecution office back in 2013, the question of how to use artificial intelligence and the question on digitalization has been there. So although I'm a paper girl, this is a question that both the prosecution office, but also the unit for the search And of course, now with the Truth Commission, it's a question that is there and that I think that we're trying to get better at it, right? So digitalization has been used to mostly to preserve the records. So mostly as a repository, right? Mostly as a way to put all of this information somewhere and to centralize information and to make sure that papers don't decay, right? But more and more, also the initial record that has been produced is digitalized. And I think that that's like the legacy of the Truth Commission. The Truth Commission was installed a little bit before the pandemic, before COVID. So they had to do most of their work online. And this was a huge challenge. And so I think that what part of what they did was to actually collect the records digitalized already, right? Like to have a digital collection of what happened in Colombia. And this is something that I think it's the first time that a transitional justice mechanism in Colombia has done this, which is that the original record is not in paper, how I like them, it's online. And this poses some challenges, but it also has a lot of benefits. One of the benefits is that this is already in virtual form, it's already in digital form, and it's been more organized than maybe papers would have been organized at the time. And most of this is public already. It's public in a web page with both public, with a public domain, but also the University of Notre Dame is also trying to preserve this digital collection. So there's a lot of benefits from how this was collected. There's also some challenges. And I think part of the challenges was that, as I said, these records were collected online. They were collected like in a performance, right? Like it wasn't like we used to do interviews, which was, you know, the interviewer with the person being interviewed in a place where no cameras were at, where no, maybe there was a recorder, but usually there were no recorders. There was only papers. The interviewer was collecting notes. And now the testimonies are done, like we're sort of doing this podcast with a microphone and a camera. And so that poses challenges for how vivid and how much can be said in those formats, right? So I would mention that.
So Gina, maybe just to conclude, what do you think can other conflicts, and here I have especially ongoing conflicts such as Sudan, Ukraine, Palestine, what can they learn from the use of records in the transitional justice process in Colombia?
So I think I'm going to mention three. So the first one I want to mention is the importance of mapping your sources and mapping the records that are a possibility, right? Colombia has learned this through the hard way, which is as we go on, we map sources and we try and look those records and try to preserve them. But for those other transitional justice mechanisms on the rise, I would say that that's a very important first step. Map the sources, map what records have to be preserved. Where can we get them? How can we actually copy them and preserve them, right? So that's, I think, the first thing I wanted to mention. The second one is to make sure to have always in mind the complementarity between all the transitional justice mechanisms and also the mechanisms that were put in place by the permanent justice to deal with the past. Colombia has had, and in this conversation, we mentioned the Truth Commission, we mentioned the Special Jurisdiction for Peace, the Historical Memory Center, the Unit for the Search, and I can keep on mentioning offices and units that are in charge of dealing with the past. And usually they don't communicate with one another. Usually there are a lot of coordination problems. So the second lesson learned, I would say, is complementarity. Be aware of the complementarities between all the mechanisms, those that were put in place particularly for the transitional justice moment, but also the mechanisms that were in place before, both the judicial ones and the extrajudicial ones. And the third lesson learned, I would say, is the challenge of establishing those most responsible. See? So in Colombia, we've had like special justice agreements to make sure that the paramilitaries come forward, that the guerrilla members come forward and say what happened, and they can get reduced penalties, reduced sentencing. But with the state and the agents of the state that were responsible for some of the crimes, we haven't had the same experience. And so here, transitional justice mechanisms have a huge challenge, which is how to make all the actors from the conflict, from the violence, come forward as a collective to give account of what happened. If this is not done collectively, the testimonies that are going to be received are going to be partial and are going to be very difficult to find acknowledgement in those testimonies. And that's an ongoing challenge we have right now, which is that guerrilla groups, paramilitary groups have come forward as groups to say what happened. And here we have vast testimonies, hours and hours of commanders of middle ranks and low ranks saying what happened. But with the state, we don't have that. With the state, we have partial testimonies from one or another that were prosecuted, and to acquire reduced sentencing, they're talking to the transitional justice mechanisms, but we don't have the group, the collective saying what happened. And this has been very troublesome, very, very hard for investigating state crimes, for investigating crimes that were committed by the state.
So, you know, just to follow up on this, because I find this fascinating, right? It's like the basically what you have is a partial memory created by records. How can you address this? And what role perhaps can civil society and your own organization play in addressing state crimes?
So I'm going to mention two things that are actually part of the discussion right now in Colombia. Judicial mechanisms have had a role in preserving archives. So civil society organizations are asking the Special Jurisdiction for Peace to preserve intelligence archives, both from the Department of Security at the time, the DAS, and also from the 28th Brigade, which was the intelligence brigade of the military. And so what civil society organizations, these are human rights organizations, have done is to litigate these cases before the Special Jurisdiction for Peace, and the Special Jurisdiction for Peace has issued precautionary measures to preserve these archives. And they've gone to the places where these archives are, these records are, and like put them in a court order, right? And have them preserved. That's one part. And the other part, which is something that my organization is doing, is to actually aiding the Special Jurisdiction for Peace in organizing these records and giving an account of what the records say that we have and what is not there. What else could be, what else is being silenced, and how to go to look for that is being silenced. So that's another important role that civil society organizations can play, which is to document that is being recovered by the judicial mechanisms, what is being said and what is not being said, and try to come up with ways to get that has been silenced.
That was Gina Cabacas Macia on the role of records in the transitional justice process in Colombia. Thank you very much for sharing your insights today with us.
Thank you, Julia.